Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Genesis 8, verses 15 through 22. I'm going to call this section of Scripture God's Covenant with Noah, Part A, because Part B will be in Genesis 9, 1 through 17, concerning God's covenant with Noah. We start in verses 15, 16, and 17 of Genesis 8. Then God spoke to Noah, "Come out of the ark, you, your wife, your sons, and your sons' wives with you. Bring out all the living creatures that are with you, birds, livestock, those that crawl on the ground, and they will spread over the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth." God spoke to Noah. How did he do that? Could John Gill suggest it could be a dream? Could have been in a vision? Could have been an articulate voice? Could be God appearing in a human form, a theophany, if you will, i.e. Jesus might have walked up to Noah and spoke to him? I don't know. That's something I always wonder. How does God speak to people? But anyway, well, however he did it, he said, "Come out of the ark." And he says, "Bring all the living creatures." He mentions birds, livestock, those are tame animals, and those that crawl on the ground, the creepy crawlers, and they're supposed to be fruitful and multiply. Well, this is exactly what God had commanded the sea creatures and birds in Genesis 1, 21 and 22 to do, to be fruitful and multiply. Now, the fish are not mentioned here in Genesis 8 after Noah's flood because they, of course, were already fruitful and multiplied, living in the waters. They weren't killed, but the birds were and the livestock were. That same command is given, be fruitful and multiply. And again, this illustrates the one of the many, many different parallels between the creation week and the flood. I've mentioned them in a previous audio. I won't go over them again, but there are so many parallels that it's very clear that what God is doing here, he is starting the world over again. He's renewing the earth. It's a new creation. It's a recreation, a new birth, if you will, of the planet after man has screwed it up with his sin. A perfect physical symbol of what he does with human beings who have been wrecked by sin and who need to be redeemed and made whole again, who need to be recreated, who need to be a new creation. We go now to Genesis 8, verses 18 through 21. So Noah, along with his sons, his wife, and his sons' wives, came out. All wildlife, all livestock, every bird, and every creature that crawls on the earth came out of the ark by their groups. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord. He took some of every kind of clean animal and every kind of clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. When the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, he said to himself, "I will never again curse the ground because of man, even though man's inclination is evil from his youth, and I will never again strike down every living thing as I have done." All right, so all the animals came out of the ark by their groups. The NIV has one kind after another. John Gill points out that the exodus from the ark of the animals was not in disorderly confusion. First thing Noah did when he got out of the ark was build an altar to the Lord. He wanted to thank God for saving him from the destruction that had come upon the earth and would have destroyed him and his family. This is the first altar on record. As the NIV Study Bible says, although Cain and Abel probably sacrificed on altars, but they were not actually explicitly mentioned. Notice that Noah took some of every kind of clean animal, which means there was lots of sacrifices. And I talked in a previous audio about how many animals were on the ark, how many kinds of animals, probably a good many, not in the thousands, because the ark couldn't have held that many, but in enough kinds of animals were there to repopulate the earth. And so if you have a sacrifice from every kind of clean animal, that was a huge sacrifice. Lots of pleasant-smelling smoke, aroma, an aromatic smoke going up into the air, because deliverance from a worldwide flood is an unparalleled deliverance, and special acknowledgement was due. Now you think, well, where do these animals come from? They were on the ark for about a year. Well, of course, clean animals can reproduce within a year, and even if they weren't, couldn't reproduce, there were seven pairs of each kind of clean animals that were brought on the ark to begin with, so they would be animals available to be sacrificed, and to do so wouldn't mess up the directive to be fruitful and multiply. Now the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma. It doesn't mean that God was physically or sensually pleased by the smell of the sacrifices, but he was pleased with the act of sacrifice. And again, what kind of a beautiful symbol that is, a physical symbol of the spiritual reality. You thank God when he delivers you, to put it in simple terms. We need to thank God every day because you deserve to be dead today, because of what you have done, what I have done, what the whole human race has done in our horrible rebellion against the God who made us. We live and move and breathe in sin, and that sin has been completely washed away by Jesus' sacrifice on his altar, the cross. At any rate, we offer Jesus as our sacrifice. Thanks for delivering us from sin. And notice that God said, I will never again curse the ground because of man. Well, Jesus is never again going to curse us when we accept his offer on the altar, his altar, the cross. All right, so Noah is freed from the curse of the ground because he was delivered. Now, what does that curse mean? It could mean the original curse that God put on the ground because of what Adam and Eve had done, their sin. And God has said, okay, well, I've cursed the ground. I flooded the earth. There's not going to be any more of that. That's it. Now, of course, the original curse is not going to be let loose. The world is not going to be delivered from that original curse until the end of time. And there's never going to be another worldwide flood again because that's part of Noah's covenant, which we'll get to in a minute. So basically what we've got to deal with as we live on this planet until we die and go to heaven is the curse that's on the earth. It's hard to grow things. It's hard to make a living. And God says, I'm not going to curse the ground, even though man's inclination is evil from his youth. In other words, God had every right to curse the ground again. He had every right to curse the world again. If the curse is the Noah's flood, which is another option for the curse, could have been the curse that he's talking about was the flood that came on the earth. I'm not really sure which one he's talking about. If he's talking about the curse that's on the earth from Adam and Eve's sin, well, he's not going to do it again. But it sounds to me more like it's the curse of the flood, because that's the context of what he's talking about here. And he says, I flooded you once. I'm not going to do it again. Seed time and harvest, which we'll get to in a minute. And we're not going to have another worldwide flood, even though mankind deserves it, even though his inclination is evil from his youth. Now, the word here for curse is a different word than the famous curse in Genesis 3:17, the creation curse. But the reference seems to be to the same curse, according to the NIV Study Bible, which I just disagreed with, because it sounds to me like it could be the curse of the flood. I think that's more likely. Now, there's not a direct promise here never to curse the earth again with a flood, if you take that curse to refer to the original curse on the ground, Adam and Eve's curse. Then you don't have a promise not to flood the world again. But that's okay, because that promise is explicitly made in Genesis 9:11. I confirm my covenant with you, God speaking to Noah, that never again will every creature be wiped out by the waters of a flood. There will never again be a flood to destroy the earth. So folks, we don't have to worry about that. Whatever Jesus meant, whatever God meant when he said, I will never again curse the ground. If he's saying, I will never again put a flood on the earth, well, then he just repeats it in Genesis 9. If he's not saying that, he says, I'll never again curse the ground like I cursed it when Adam sinned. Well, okay, you don't have a promise there that God will not flood the earth, but just go to Genesis 9 and you got the promise. We're not going to be subject to a flood anymore, even though man's inclination is evil from his birth. Now, here's a good verse showing that evil inclination, Genesis 6:5. When the Lord saw that man's wickedness was widespread on the earth and that every scheme his mind thought of was nothing but evil all the time. That sounds like everybody I know. I read history, I watch the movies, I read novels, and it's nothing but sin, corruption, pride, lust of money, lust for money, lust of the flesh, usually sexual lust. It's all there. How can anybody not? I just love when I was in China. You would go into these elementary schools, and on top of the doorway, as you would go under, it had Karl Marx up there talking about how man is good. I saw a plaque that said something about the goodness of mankind. I said, are you kidding me? This same country that went through the horrors of the Cultural Revolution and Mao Zedong, and you're telling me that man is basically good? What kind of fool do you think I am? That's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. How about John Dewey? Oh, mankind is basically good. Yeah, we've killed over 50 million human beings since in the 1970s. I think in 1973, the Roe v. Wade decision, we're still doing it. Oh, yeah, mankind's basically good. Uh-huh. No, his inclination is evil from his youth. Now, the NIV says from his childhood instead of youth, which is just another translation. But the point of the statement that mankind has sinned from his youth is that sin infects a person's life from his conception and birth. Original sin, if you will, is passed down from your mama and your daddy to you. Psalm 51:5, indeed, I was guilty when I was born. I was sinful when my mother conceived me. You started out in sin and you're going to end in sin without Jesus washing that sin away. Psalm 58:3, the wicked go astray from the womb. Liars err from birth. From the womb, folks, that's what you are. A miserable, rotten, lousy sinner. However, once you get saved, you're a saint because the Bible calls us not as sinners, but as saints all the way through the New Testament. We go to Genesis 8:22. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, and day and night will not cease. Now you see here what Moses is mentioning here is the normal operations of our life on the planet. Seed time and harvest, that's you got to plant, you got to sow so you can eat. Cold and heat, there's your change of seasons, summer and winter, same thing, day and night. The normal operations of the physical universe will not cease. Now, of course, this is referring to a flood in Genesis 9. God says, I will never again flood the earth. But look here, you don't have to just apply it to the flood. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, that's anything that would knock that out. Now, the reason I mention that is because there is a lot of fear and uncertainty about people about a pulsed attack. What is that? EMP, electromagnetic pulse attack on the electrical grid. All the electricity will die out and we'll all starve, which we would. It would be a total disaster if that happened. When I grew up in the 1960s, the 1963 Cuban Missile Crisis happened, and I thought I was going to die. I had dreams of nuclear fireballs going up in the smoke. I had dreams of my little next-door neighbor banging on the doors of our fallout shelter in the basement trying to get in, and we said, we can't let you in because we'll all die down here. And so he just roasted to death radioactively outside the door. Downstairs in the fallout shelter were sleeping bags, water pump, canned food. I know what it means to live in fear. And I remember back then reading this, and I said, hey, we're not going to go up in a nuclear fireball because God has promised that as long as the earth endures, all the normal operations of the seasons, of the sun, of the moon, and so forth, they're going to keep going. The earth is going to keep going. So let's take comfort about that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm finished with Genesis 8, verses 15 through 22, God's covenant with Noah, part A. We'll take up in our next audio, Genesis 9, verses 1 through 17, God's covenant with Noah, part B. Hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.